Okay, we have two presenters today. The primary presenter is going to be Sharon Conklin. She's an RN, MBA, and MFA, and she's Director of Healthcare Business Operations at Catalyst, a division of Haskell. She resides in Charlotte, North Carolina. As an author and speaker on perioperative supply chain and interventional, and I practice that word too, I'll have you know, interventional platforms, Sharon will share her insights and experience helping healthcare organizations identify opportunities for cost avoidance, process improvement, and margin management. Her background is nursing, business, and design gives her firsthand knowledge of relationship between building structures, operational improvement, and patient experience. Trained by Edwards Deming in total quality management, we all refer to it as TQM, she brings a proven track record in resolving system-wide organization challenges and creating organizational alignment. Sharon has worked for several years with Healthcare IQ out of Palmetto, Florida. She uses the HCIQ technology to help her clients. There may well be some of you with us today who recognize Aaron Dobies, who was our featured presenter on May 27th. He wowed us with a very robust demo of their technology. We will see it applied in Sharon's presentation. A bit about Aaron. He started out in data mining, working in about every role in the company until he found himself on the road and in front of customers, listening to their issues and helping them through technology and data transparency. He now has one foot in front of the customer and the other foot with R&D, making sure HCIQ is developing what the healthcare industry needs. With that, let's sit back and let's get going. It's up to you guys.
Well, I think you did a great job. So I'm Aaron Dobies. I'm going to be quiet for now, but I'm going to hand it over to Sharon, and she will get us going.
Thanks, Aaron. I'm so worried about being on mute, so there's nothing. But listen, thank you so much, and good morning and good afternoon, because I know that some are in different time zones, and we appreciate you, Linda, and your team for allowing us to present to the audience. And I think that, and I hope that what Aaron and I show you can give you some pretty good insight in terms of the power of data when applied the right way, what kind of results it actually can produce. We, as Linda said, I worked with Catalyst before Healthcare IQ before I came to Catalyst. And so I know the program very well. And the very first thing I did was reach out and say, hey, I need this data company, you know, to partner with for us to be able to accomplish the things that our clients are needing. So we have been working together. Gosh, Aaron, what, about 10 years, 15 years, something like that?
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah.
So, you know, the big thing is about empowering our customers with data and knowledge. And oftentimes we see the two disconnected. So you get good data, but then you don't have the knowledge in terms of how to apply it, or you know how to apply it and you don't have the data to support you. So you'll see where we're pulling both of these together and focusing in a couple of areas, and we'll be presenting a case study as well. So, you know, as far as healthcare leadership experience, we have a very robust team, and we have, depending on which way you want to look at it, vendor, you know, customer, client-facing experience in healthcare, 20 to over 44 years of experience, and same with the business. We have, with the business side, and we have CEOs, CFOs, and a whole host of other people that as we work with our client, we come across issues or concerns, we bring the right kind of expertise to the table to help support that. So, you know, why did we decide to come together? Well, the first piece is that we really understand what our customer needs are and the disconnects that are happening across, you know, the healthcare platform, and that no one group really had a holistic solution. Aaron.
No, I was, I know I said I wasn't going to interrupt, but I think it's really, really important. I think this one bullet, I think, is one of the most important bullets in this whole deck, because still today, there is no one company, right, that has everything in one place. And that's why I think this combination of Catalyst and Healthcare IQ really is the only holistic solution that we see. So anyways, I just wanted to really emphasize that, because going forward, when you think about everything that Sharon's going to talk about, I think it's really, really important that you think about how those two things come together. And obviously we'll weave that web as we go.
So, you know, in this COVID time and in the financial challenges that we're facing, and, you know, it's always seems like it's on a constant track of changing, maximizing capital and maximizing your human assets couldn't be more important. And so that's one of the things that we keep in mind as we're going forward, is how are you utilizing those resources, and how are those resources actually being applied in the organization? So Catalyst is an actual healthcare consultancy company, and we're very devoted to bringing healthcare solutions to the table. We work in many areas, strategy, finance, operations, real estate, planning, and much, much more. So when we say operations, we are talking about operations across the entire platform of the organization. And of course, Healthcare IQ, why did I choose to partner back with Healthcare IQ? There are a lot of organizations out there saying they're agnostic and they bring data together, but the issue is not only bringing data together, making sure that data is enriched and it's in the right format, so it gives you the right information to go down the right road to be able to solve the problems. Both Catalyst and Healthcare are 100% healthcare focused. We're very agile and scalable, so we work with small hospitals, large health systems, just huge multi-hospital health systems. We always have the customer's ROI in mind. We have a lot of repeat clients, and we're very multidisciplinary. So if you need pharmacy, or we need to bring in a lab person, or I need to bring in an MD or someone from anesthesia, I always have them at Catalyst to be able to support the objectives of what we've uncovered in the organization that perhaps needs to be addressed. Aaron. Next slide. So, Aaron, you forgot to take a note out, but I tried to look at the breadth of both what Aaron and I have done across the years, and you know, we really mirror each other with over 70 systems collectively between consulting and Healthcare IQ. We have covered, we've both been in business over 25 years, and we have, 140 plus projects that we work together on. And we've done many more projects individually, but to talk about different systems and how we've addressed their issues, we have a lot. And it's not always 140 just in operations. It could be our strategy department working with them. It could be, finance. It could be any one of those services that we provide with Catalyst. Aaron. So I wanted to talk just a little bit about approach. This is a little bit of an eyesore, but it's not meant really to be read, but it's really to talk about why we approach the business the way we do, and what we hope to be able to provide at the end of the day. So I think the number one step in this process, which is defining what your norm is where the biggest challenge is. We find when we go into clients that there is a huge disconnect across many of the systems that are out there. And so you're only picking up part of the information. You'll hear me focus on periop today, because it's one of the biggest culprits to me that is out there in terms of disconnect in data. It's one that Aaron and I have done a lot of work in terms of making sure that all of the interdependencies of that department is actually connected. We then also look at productivity. What's really going on in the organization? How are they working within the organization? And then put together a operational execution plan or design, whether it be facility or whether it's operations or whatever we uncover, that is designed specifically for the client that we're working with. We don't do sort of a canned approach or a canned solution. We do have a pretty specific approach, but the solution is really informed by what the organization is struggling with. Aaron? So, you know, when we talk about why did we come together, you know, it's about how does this data merge, but then how is this data cleaned and you know, put together, but then how do we transform that information or that data into information, and how do we make it operational or actionable? A lot of times we'll see benchmarks in an organization which measures retrospective behavior. It doesn't necessarily give you something that you can actually take action on at that time. Aaron, you want to talk a little bit more about how you guys approach this from a data standpoint?
Yeah, I'm going to cover it more when I get kind of, I have a little more detailed slides, but I think the really important part is in order for Sharon to do all the things that she's about to talk about in the case study, and to do them quickly. I think that's the hard, you know, Sharon, if Sharon goes in, she can do most of that case study without us, right? But the other thing that it doesn't do is the time and the amount of data that you can take in and the quality of that data. You know, if she's only running on 70 or 80% of the data she needs because the rest can't be got or can't be normalized or whatever it is, that puts, you know, her and that customer at a disadvantage. So I think that's really the key, is being able to get all the data in, but also to make sense of more and more of that data is really the key when it comes to the data side. And then obviously we talked about that integrated team. So having our team and her team together to really create that actionable information and then execute that actionable information is really, and I'll get into more of the nuts and bolts on the data integration side later.
So regardless whether, you know, the client is brought us in for a specific thing, we can look at an organization from a holistic standpoint. So, and if they wanted us to come in and say, look at my organization as whole, find my hotspots, where am I going to get the biggest bang for my buck, you know, those types of things, then, you know, we can take that approach. There's not areas that we do not cover. And I can't emphasize that enough, because as I go through this case study, you're going to see where there's a ton of interdependencies within organizations that oftentimes get left out of the analysis. So we need to be able to look at it as a collective whole. So the question becomes, you know, I have this case study, and the question the client asks us is, you know, are they maximizing their organizational assets? You know, are they maximizing their building? Are they maximizing their labor? You know, are they, is their processes working right? You know, and they were about to undergo an expansion actually within that organization. And, you know, revenue and capital and, you know, all of that's always up in the air. And they really did not necessarily have the money to pay for this large expansion. And so they wanted us to come in and take a look and see if there was other alternatives or ways that they could either reduce costs or we could validate for sure for them, both financially as well as through operational review, their need to do that expansion. So they wanted to take it a step further. One of the questions that we see, or one of the things we see all a lot, is people use that within perioperative services, you know, turnover time. And while turnover time is a good retrospective measure, it doesn't give you an ability to see what's really impacting the organization. So for that reason, and because of all of the complexities around perioperative services, I chose to focus on that because at hand, they were doing a big expansion, you know, of the operating room. It was going to be quite costly for them. So one, how can I validate this really and optimize my assets? Can I make it budget neutral? Is there any way that I can make it budget neutral? And then how will the integrated analytics really impact cost management and asset demand? So in this next few slides, I'm going to go through that and show how we approached, why we approached the way we did, and how we answered those questions for the client. Aaron. So let me give you a little bit of demographics. And I think this is one of the things that is very important is the presentation focuses around 154 four bed critical access hospital. Not very big at all. It's located in the Southeast US, but they had a high emergency room visit. They had 7 ORs and 2 endo suites, and they were the poorest county in the state. You know, when we first went in and looked at the facility, grossly undersized ORs, understood the reason why they were thinking about an expansion. They had an inefficient ED layout, and they had had some employee safety issues that had occurred. So being able to look at all of those in its entirety was going to be important for them. The other piece was there was a lot of patient dissatisfaction and physician dissatisfaction with the organization in terms of them being able to be in surgery and be able to see clients in a timely manner out of the ED. But for today's purposes, I really want to kind of focus with peri-op because it's so complex. And if I took on ED, which we probably have a track record of close to the highest number of EDs, I think we're about 350 ED consulting projects plus. So it would actually entail a couple of presentations. So I'm going to focus on peri-op and try to answer these project executives that we were challenged with. You know, does the cost of construction, can it be lowered and still meet their demand? Can we identify their high levels of patient dissatisfaction and surgeon and staff dissatisfaction and see if there were ways to optimize throughput? So next slide, Aaron. So we came up with, you know, three key components that we were going to look at. One was we wanted to understand how the patient flowed in the organization. And this is not a flow that is strictly focused just at the facility. This is from the time that the patient and the surgeon had made a decision that surgical intervention was important. What happened from that point all the way through discharge? We wanted to understand the gaps in the process. And, you know, we kind of challenged Aaron and Healthcare IQ to be able to pull some of this data into light for us, but they did it without a hiccup. And then look at the interdependent processes. I'm going to talk a little bit about that today because oftentimes people do not talk about what really happens within a surgery suite and how complex it is. And I'm focusing on that because when you've got complex processes like that and you're trying to bring them together, the way the data comes together becomes critical, and it being accurate is going to be critical. We looked at block scheduling because of the physicians, and they were so unhappy with not being able to get on the schedule. We actually used some of our proprietary technology around heat maps and some of the analytics we did in addition to what Healthcare IQ provided, as well as where appropriate, we either emulated what was going on or we actually did simulations of what could happen to test fit for optimal flow. So let's start with the design. So prior to us coming in, there are completely different architectural firm came in. And they had done this design. We've worked actually with this architectural firm quite a bit. And so for us to come back and make recommendations, even if it was changes to their design, we were very comfortable with doing it. So they had an expansion on the ED, they had an expansion on the OR. And between the two of them, it was gonna cost the client around $64 million to do these expansions and to get them where they needed to be. So Aaron, so we looked at several things, and looking at that data capture across all departments, we looked at timestamps and preference cards and supply chain and case description and delays, and I can just go on and on and on, because when Aaron and them pulled data, that it gives me a lot of detailed data, and then it's how we put that data back together. So a lot of times we'll find key components that we were not even looking for that elevate themselves, and we see that they're a problem. A lot of times folks don't necessarily look at correlation of sterile processing with the hospital, because sterile processing, they look at as a different department, but it really has to be correlated together. We looked at patient admission testing and how that was utilized, physician alignment, KPIs, and I could just go on. So we wanted to take that information and those key components of our approach and really develop a clear understanding of operations to be able to get the client where they needed to be. So then one of the first things we did was we do a lot of heat maps. Heat maps just brings the data to life, you know, where you can visually see it in a way, in a different way. So if you look at this heat map, it's depicting the ORs Monday through Friday, and we are showing, you know, dark red is really bad, dark green is really good. And where does the client fit on that scale? And I think key to understanding this is understanding that when you're doing regular turnaround or turnover time, one, a lot of times people mix it up and they call turnover time and turnaround time the same thing. Completely two different measures telling you a completely different story. But we wanted to be able to depict what was happening during the case duration so that we could see that. Because when you do turnover time, you're looking at, you know, when the case was done, what time, and when you turned the room over, and then how much time did you have left. But to really look at perioperative services, you have to look at what's happening within the case, what's the timestamps around that, and then, how does that play out into both space and labor and so many different components. So the next slide is going to depict kind of how we read this from a very high level standpoint. Now, I'm only going to give you kind of surface high level clippets of what we did, but we go very deep. So if I just take the very top part of that, that heat map, and I look and I see where the green is and where the red is, and then go retrospectively, cases are closed at the end of the day, what really happened? So if you'll see, a lot of the green went away. And these are based off of billable minutes out of that operating room, because, I mean, that's what you're getting paid for. And so we try to correlate it to finances, you know, as much as we can, as well as time and flow. So you see that they didn't maximize that OR the way that it should have been or how they scheduled. So that said, dig down a little bit deeper, Sharon. So Aaron, you know, was very good about getting us more information, and we began to look at the blocks. So if you look at the blocks in that OR and you think about the time that the blocks are actually blocked down in that, you know, in that operating room suite, they had about 343,000 minutes that they could actually bill or schedule within. The block used, the way they have it blocked, they only blocked out and used 133,000 of those minutes. And, you know, again, a lot of it has to do with what happens to the case. Once that patient goes into the room, are they really maximizing that time that they've been allocated? And then looking at remaining billable minutes, they had 210,000 or 61% of their available minutes that were not being utilized appropriately. That becomes huge, especially when you're trying to do an expansion. So again, we dig down a little bit deeper and we said, so what really happened? Okay, so we took one day and we said, okay, in that OR, the dark numbers, if you can see those across the top, those show how they were scheduled. Given the appropriate break, they were scheduled right. But then the gray shows what actually happened. When we look at these, oftentimes we'll see where, you know, occasionally you'll have a delay, a case will be longer than what you thought, you know, different things like that, but you don't see a constant breaks like this. And this is just one little snippet, and we looked at almost 2 years worth of data. So we knew that it was cultural, and that oftentimes they didn't really understand, you know, when they looked at their data, what that data was actually telling them. Next slide. Aaron? Okay. So to approach this, we went in and we started breaking down the activities that actually occur within the OR. We used all of AORN's best practice standards out there since they tied a joint commission. And we wanted to actually take those activities pretty consistent across most ORs. And you see, you know, exactly what the time frame is for the steps that are outlined. Again, this is an eyesore. I just want to kind of go over it from a top end. But, you know, what happens from the end of a case when you've closed and you're at the end of the case to the patient's out of the room? And that is what's being depicted here. So when I look at that and I look at all these interdependents, if you look at the blue line, these are all the people for this particular activity here in the room that has to be coordinated as you're trying to bring that patient out of the room and get ready for the next patient to come in. So Aaron, can you go to the next slide? So I decided, well, I'm gonna break it down. There's three steps that we look at. End of case to the patient's out of the room, patient's out of the room to the next patient comes in the room, and then from the patient in the room to surgeon cut. And, you know, when you look at not only what happens in the OR, but what has to be coordinated on the back end with supply chain, what has to be coordinated on the back end with sterile processing, you know, maybe anesthesia, there's just a lot of different activities. On average breaks out the way that I have it laid out. So there's usually about 12 individual staff members to do that first move into case to patient out of the room, or that first depiction. And there's actually 45 distinct activities that actually occurs. When you go patient out of the room to the next patient comes in the room, there are still 12 people involved from the room standpoint, but there are 33 distinct activities that have to occur. Any one of those activities can throw that case off. So if you look at patient in the room to the time the surgeon actually cuts, then there's another 44 distinct activities. And none of these activities are repetitive here. These are all very distinct activities for the category that they fall in. Aaron, next slide. Another way that we depict this is that we look at these cases and we say, okay, what we know that once you start one case and it starts late, then you typically have that occur, everything sequential to that actually occurs late as well. So if you look at the orange kind of graph that is here, the orange and the gray, one is case start, okay? The other one is subsequent cases. So you can see kind of how they, you know, mirror each other and they play off of each other. So we collect delays when we're there. And if we don't have the delays that need to be collected, then we help organizations set those delays up so that we can actually look and see where do we go to fix the problem. You know, is it because the surgeon's late? Is it because, you know, they were doing a regional block? Is it staff issues? You know, is it just logistics? So we literally break it down into all of these distinct buckets so that we know where to go to fix the problem. Next slide. This is one of our slides that a lot of times my CFOs and my COOs say, whoa, I didn't realize this. So this is an actual case log. And so we review those case logs as well. And we looked at what was happening from the time the wheels were in the room to wheels out? What was the total time? And then what was the procedure start to procedure close? And what you're going to see is that there were 42 minutes from the time the patient went into the room until the patient was cut. Why did it take them, you know, almost, you know, 3/4 of an hour to get that patient ready for the surgeon to actually cut? And then once the patient, they closed that case, why did it take 36 minutes to get that patient out of the room? So in total, there's 1 hour and 18 minutes that is really what you're dealing with, not necessarily your turnover time. So this starts giving you a more complete picture of what's going on and how do you maximize productivity in those rooms. The other component that we look at is we do look at preference cards. And these preference cards, while people say, oh, well, it's how I charge, it's so much more than that. So we do a charge capture and denial review when we go in initially to look at these ORs, because it's going to tell me, it's going to be very, very telling in terms of how was that case scheduled. And case scheduling becomes very important, because when you schedule a case and you attach a procedure to it, a CPT, it's mapped to an ORP, which is an operating room procedure card. That ORP process triggers your trays, your supplies, all of those things that supply chain has to order, all of the things that they need to get ready, all the equipment that needs to be ready, and it should decrement it and take it out of commission for that frame of time. If you get that wrong right up at the beginning, everything goes bad. You're not getting the right equipment, you've overbooked your equipment, you've overbooked your procedure because it may be a 2-hour procedure and you just booked one that's in the system that's for 1 hour long. And so there's just a lot of issues that occur with making sure that this component here is right. And I will say that most ORs that I go into, this component is probably the one that drives a lot of multiple issues within operations and perioperative services and PACU and cath labs and interventional radiology, usually any of the areas that are invasive, because it starts out wrong. And then, or there's a breakdown within that process. So it becomes very important that Aaron and I work together and he gives me the right kind of information to be able to look at this in the appropriate manner. Next slide. The other component we looked at is pre-admission testing. Now, these sound like really big numbers, but quite honestly, when we go in and do an actual manual audit of what's going on, it's not unusual for us to see, you know, this many cases canceled the day of surgery. They either are canceled completely or they're canceled and moved to a different time slot because something in the process was not booked right, was not scheduled right, or there was a breakdown. And so sort of the breakdown is about 15% is office is rescheduling it because something is going on in their office. They may have a positive drug screen or a lab work is abnormal or there's a diagnostic change. And so when that diagnostic change occurs, either you have enough time to get them on the schedule, depending on the urgency of the patient, or if it's something that is elective, we have to reschedule it. And then anesthesia, anesthesia is going to take a look at this and determine whether or not, you know, that case needs to move forward. When we looked at the actual facility, next slide, Aaron. If you'll recall, they originally had a design where it was a pretty good expansion, you know, and there was nothing wrong with that design. But could they approach it in a different way and be able to look at things more cost effectively? Well, we looked at expanding their ORs, moving their cysto, changing how pre-op was laid out, looking at so many different components on, in terms of supply, where it was located, where anesthesia was located, and right-sizing the organization in place. The redesign would reduce the capital expenditure from $64 million to between 10 and 14 million. So I'm going to stop there and pause, and I'm going to hand it off to Aaron and let Aaron begin to talk about how he pulled all this data for me to do this analysis. Aaron?
Thanks, Sharon. So just real fast, I'm not going to spend a ton of time, but a lot of the questions we get are around, well, you know, I have bad data. You know, I know it's bad. We can't do anything with it. How are you going to do it? So Healthcare IQ is really here for Sharon to make sense of all that data. And when we come in to kind of tell the data story, when we ingest data, we start and we understand that healthcare as a whole, we have disparate data all over. And we actually start with industry data. So getting all the industry data together, because without that industry baseline, when we get data from the hospitals, we can't make any sense of it, right? So we have to bring down reference data. So this is things like we digest all of CMS, all the ARN standards, right? All payer claims data. And then in addition to that, when you get into the product, because so much of it is around understanding what was used in the room, to make sense of all that data, you need distribution data, GPO data, every supplier catalog in the industry, right? We need all this data from the industry side. And then when we talk about the facility, the hospital data, and this is an oversimplified view, of course, because it has one bucket for materials management system. We worked on a client, it's an IDN, they have about 70 facilities. They have 28 different materials systems, just material systems. So to get all the spend data in one place, think about how much integration that had to take just to understand how many of these did we buy, what price did we pay, right? And then that is multiplied by every different type of data that we're dealing with. So charge master data, EMR data, ORS data, financials, you know, we talked about revenue. You have to know all the payers and what you're actually getting paid for these cases. And the real key here is getting all the data in one place. And once that client or you know, Sharon has access to one data set end to end that has everything in it, asking those business questions and getting those answers is all of a sudden very, very quick and easy to do. With that, so you have all of these other things happening, that the ecosystem from a data perspective, you see over here, we have, you know, customer data coming in through our semantic ETL. Right. So that, and I have a slide on that. We'll talk more about the ingestion process. You have all that reference data coming in. You have all the our internal reference data, you know, our catalog. We have 5.5 million active unique items. And that's the ability, again, to match that incoming data to our catalog to make sense of it. And then, of course, the output, right? Feeding all the dashboards that Catalyst has, feeding our tools and using all of that together. Again, to execute those projects for Sharon. On the data ingestion, that's one of the key things that we bring to the table for Sharon, is being able to ingest and then map, transform, enrich, categorize, and normalize all that data. And, you know, we've heard for my entire career, I've heard garbage in, garbage out, right? And we have tons of customers that come to us and go, our data is terrible. You know, there's no way you're going to be able to work with it. And our expertise, right, is making sense of that data. And the beauty is Sharon's team, we can identify gaps in the data. You know, Sharon already talked about, oh, you aren't capturing that timestamp. You aren't getting that field. You're not capturing this piece of information. Well, now you have Sharon and her team there to actually help execute the change to start capturing that data, right? So it's this beautiful loop of we can identify the holes in the data, and then Sharon's team can help affect change to start capturing the data you need to execute on these things. And then the technology is getting it done exponentially faster than we were ever able to before manually. And that's really what, again, allows us to go from implementation to value in minutes, not oh, it's going to take us 90 days or 180 days just to get the data together, right? We need to start executing, you know, we have a goal of that minute one savings, right? Pen comes off the contract, you put a report down in front of the table, and we start executing value to offset the engagement right then. And when we look at that, there's lots of different buckets. And there's some of these buckets that happen in parallel with Sharon's team where we can go, you know, great example, you know, if we look at just that spend data, right, product benchmarking, you know, we have the most robust benchmarks in the whole industry because, again, we're independent. So it's every GPO is represented, every vendor is represented, every distributor is represented, right? And we can go in and actually help supply chain on a even unrelated project execute savings on commodity items or maybe even price parity. They're paying 10 different prices for the same item. Well, if you paid the lowest price for all those, we could offset the whole engagement cost, right? So all of these things happen both in parallel and together. We get into utilization. We start looking at the actual cost per case and all those things. And you get into encounter, and that has views of, you know, benchmarks against the nation in clinical performance. So cost per case, length of stay, readmit rates, mortality rates, et cetera. And then we have other tools, you know, Colors IQ, we have a, you know, data visualization tool and customization opportunities. Obviously with time, I don't want to take a ton of time with this, but I do want to show how fast, and I might've been, you know, we might've been talking for too long here, but I'm going to open up our tool and I'm going to log in and I'm going to go through, and again, this is going to be very, very fast. I'm going to go into our utilization. So now this is pulling up for this customer, all their data wide open. So this is a real live customer. It's de-identified data, but this is a real live customer. So this is exactly how they would see it. And what we're looking at here is every single service line that did a case in the data set, every single physician who did a case in that time span, and every single procedure that was done. I can pick any one of these and expand. And the beauty, again, of this team coming together is when we initially come in, you know, you have to train people. It's easy to use, but still, you have to be trained. But when you have Sharon's team executing this, they already know what it is. So they can jump in and start using the tool instantly to get that value. So if we go, hey, look, we're going to look at orthopedics. Obviously, I always pick on orthopedics first. I'm going to filter on orthopedics. And you'll see the dynamic filtering. This is really the key to real-time analytics, right? It's not, oh, I'm going to run a report. I'll go have lunch. Maybe it'll finish by the time I come back. This is, I want that answer right now. So I'm going to click and I'm going to get it. Well, before I could have even scrolled down, that data had already filtered the procedures. So if I expand my procedures now, I see every single orthopedic procedure because it's already filtered. I see that total knees is my number one case count. I'm a very supply chain oriented guy, right? I've been working with supply chains for 20 years. So maybe I say, you know what? I only care about savings. So I just sorted the data by savings. Again, no lag, no waiting. And I see that total knee is also my savings opportunity. I can filter the data and you'll see it in real time this time where as soon as I click that button, these are now just physicians who have done total knees. It's that fast. I can expand the physician piece and this customer can come in here and they had three docs who they wanted to target anyways because they're kind of those leading docs, right? So they said, you know what, we're going to look at Dr. Tanner, we're going to look at Dr. George, and we're going to look at Dr. Morrow because those are the three most high profile docs they have. So we highlight those three docs and you see all the filters are in place. So then when we move now to a different view, Sharon and her team and the end users at the hospitals can instantly see we targeted these three docs. Here's every doc you have, but here are the three you targeted, and here's everything about their cost per case when we're looking at the supply side, right, that they could think about. So here's their cost distribution, the acuity of the patient, and this is where that data integration comes in, right? Oh, we want to affect change. Well, if you go after cost per case, the first thing you hear about is, well, you know, my patients are different. They're the sickest patients we deal with. So having acuity, having OR time, having the average versus the median cost per case is so important to be able to have those conversations. And then within utilization compare, we can actually take the healthcare IQ categorization. So these are our proprietary categorization schemes. And you can see it's very easy to understand the products you're looking at. We call them common sense, clinically based product groupings. So if we look at this orthopedic joint knee components, okay. But here's the fun part. And I say fun, right? You know, only a data geek, right, finds this fun. But we all enjoy this. if I now scroll, I can see each of my docs and I actually see their average clinical utilization and cost for each type of item. So when Sharon's team is coming in here and going, who do we talk to first about this issue? They're already seeing where they have problems. And the beauty is you then are training the customer to ask these same questions. So now if we look at components, the two docs who had a higher average cost per case, who are way above the average, actually have great implant pricing. So we went, okay, it's not an implant problem. Now, funny enough, the doc that the customer identified as their clinical champion, his was way through the roof. His was much higher. His implant price was much higher. And this now, because of the data integration, this is how fast you get an answer. You go, why is that? One click, I expand it out, and I see they're using the new Smith & Nephew Oxinium-coated knees, which are their most expensive, newest, you know, shiny thing. So the Smith rep did a great job of getting their clinical champion to use this knee on every single case. And that's how fast Sharon's team and the end users can now get to that data. It's not, this could take 90 days, 180 days to manually combine and get to this answer. Sharon just got this answer in what, under a minute? And you start affecting those changes and having those conversations. And you can do the same thing from the supply side. So if we go into just spend analytics, you can come in here, you get an executive dashboard. It shows you everything about PO, invoice, on contract, off contract, anything you want to know from a spend perspective with regard to the spend, opportunities, savings, anything like that. I think I let it sit for too long. There we go. So you have PO, invoice, benchmark savings. So this is just pure savings, not optimization, not changing how people practice medicine. This is just cost savings, right? Even to the point where this is a simple one. This is just where they paid higher than their contract price. They are owed $107,000 because they paid higher than they should have. So when we talk about, you know, a net contract or, you know, essentially paying for our engagements, we can knock that out in no time with all of this data. And then lastly, the thing, when we start really digging down and we start talking about changing products, one of the biggest pain points is if we look up a product, or if you ask them about a product like a pacemaker. So this is a Medtronic pacemaker, and you say, oh, well, you know, who do we talk to about this? You know, the sad part is half the time they have to go ask the Medtronic rep, who should we talk to about this pacemaker? Who's using it the most, right? And the rep might know, but now with one click, I can go to purchase and utilization, and I see exactly, and then I click on physician, here are the physicians that use that product. Okay, so Dr. Braun uses it hands down the most. We're gonna go talk to Dr. Braun first. So when Sharon's team is trying to target those key stakeholders or those key service lines, okay, we see this issue, who should we navigate to? Who should we be talking to? You can answer those questions now in real time. So there's no delay, there's no, oh, it took us 90 days just to get the data together and then another 30 days to figure out who we should talk to. We just did the whole thing in real time in 5 minutes. And so when you talk about the speed to value, this collaboration between Catalyst and Healthcare IQ is seeing more speed to value than we've ever seen before. So very exciting for us. We can do all the same things. We can look at all the data visually as well. And this helps a lot with, once we try and communicate the data to the customer, it's very easy to do it visually. And I'm not going to go through a whole demo, but the idea is as fast as the conversation can move, we can move in the data and drive down and give all the metrics. And it can be totally customized to that. Customers' metrics, things they're looking for, KPIs that Sharon wants to look at. So it's very easy to do. So again, I know that was very fast, but it was meant to show not really the content, but how fast now with data integration, normalization, how fast you can get to that value. And the beauty of Sharon's team coming in fully armed with all that, those tools, hers and ours together, and how fast she can execute that value is phenomenal. So with that, I think I only had one more slide. This was just to go to show, this is actually it's in the tools, but this is our encounter analytics. So we talked about those national benchmarks. So being able to compare my length of stay against the nation, cost per case against the nation, readmission rates, mortality rates, right? And then the same thing from a revenue side as well. So this is the payer profile. I like to use slides here so I can zoom in. But you see, this is by procedure, and I can tell you who you're profitable with and who you're losing money. Every time you do a case with this payer, you lose money, right? So, and then we can start dig down, look at what docs are doing those cases. And that, again, it's just speed to value is the most important thing to get that when you're trying to find the value and then execute those changes. So all together, and I think this is amazing, and I'll start this slide and then Sharon can, you know, add her comments. But we showed you this slide earlier, but we pulled all of the numbers out of it. So we talked about how we get all the data, we ingest that data, the combined teams take that data to the facility, and then we actually have actionable information quickly that we can go execute all of these things. Remember how small this hospital was? 150 beds? We affected $121 million in both gained revenue, right, and cost savings for this facility. Huge, huge impact on their bottom line. And that's really the key. How quickly we can get to that now is really just, it's magical. And this team between Healthcare IQ and Catalyst is the only way that we could ever get that. And honestly, there's even more, and I'll let Sharon talk about it, but there's even more opportunity there as we go down the path with that customer.
The thing about the $121 million that was such an eye-opener for the client was the fact that we were only looking at one department. We had not looked at the ED. We had not looked at, you know, their cath labs or their endo labs. We had not even looked at, you know, their length of stay across the house to see if they were discharging patients in the appropriate manner or what have you. With the data integrated that way, depending on the problem that the organization is having. Like Aaron just showed you where, you know, he could look at length of stay, he could look at payer mix, he could look at all those components. Any one of those we can dig down into to get to the root cause of what the issues are. And the beauty of it, and one of the reasons like I like to approach an operating room this way is because a lot of times when you go in, one, there's data credibility issues, and two, they're so focused and frustrated over they can't get their cases on, they don't get them started on time. So by me working in parallel with Aaron, you know, I start that process really about change management. I'm beginning to answer the issues the doctors are grappling with every day because their time is money. And so it's sort of like I give you a piece, now I need for you to help me with this other component. And it ends up being a really beautiful, you know, beautiful relationship. And we can dig all the way down if I had to go pull the invoice to show them that what we're showing them is actual, you know what I mean, type of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But this is just a, tip of the iceberg. I mean, we're not talking, you know, we're not talking about, you know, what happens when a lot of organizations are going into command centers. And so, you know, a lot of the vendors are saying, oh, we're agnostic, we're this, which is correct. But the problem is that you can be agnostic all day long, but if the data is incorrect, it's still going to send you down the wrong path. And so a lot, we'll go in and we'll look at their data and we'll clean that data up before they actually fully implement a command center, because you want to make sure that those data streams going across actually is the right kind of data. And it's so supportive for like IT, for IT to be able to take that information and have confidence that what they're mapping together, like for the command center, is the correct information. But, you know, when you look at the supply savings here and you look at the revenue enhancement component, you know, from a supply chain savings, the $3.7 million was just really getting into the data and correcting the data, that they had the right price in there. There were not price parity issues. You know, they had multiple vendors. And let's say we narrowed some of those down that really did not have a lot of clinical impact. It was more choice. And again, because I'm working with them to solve some of their day-to-day issues, they're more receptive to me talk about some of the other components that are out there. But we were able to go and set up processes with the surgeons and how they collected their data and when they ran their labs so that we could eliminate a lot of those case cancellations. The labor savings, we were able to pull a lot of overtime back into regular hours, eliminate a lot of the add-on and after hour weekend add-on cases. So there's just a lot of components when you start looking at it from that standpoint. And I think, you know, one of the biggest things was the facility, which is what we were brought in for. Now you say, oh my gosh, you know, this architectural firm brought you in to look at their facility and all of a sudden now they have no project. Well, what happened, and we were again very close with them, is they had other things that needed to be done and they were struggling kind of prioritizing components. So by bringing a solution for the facility the way we did, they were able to redirect this money into other critical projects that they needed as well, i.e. for them, it was addressing the ED issues. So, you know, there's just a whole host of information that you can get when you start pulling information. We've only touched the surface and one area, you know, one or two areas. And the reason why we focused on supply chain is because when Aaron's working on that information, and if you recall earlier, I talked about the preference card. That's where supply chain integrates with it. And so I need to be able to get that information correct. I also have to integrate, you know, the equipment with Biomed and integrate and make sure that's correct and that, you know, the list is set up so that when you attach to a piece of equipment, it takes it, it decrements it from available supplies. It does the same thing when you have, you know, all your supply chain integrated as well. So there's just a lot of different things that you can put into place. But this is just a touch of the iceberg. I thought it was just pretty amazing for $121 million. The revenue component, what I wanted to point out about that is we took a year of information per OR to understand the compilation of cases that hit those ORs and what days and what their average revenue per minute is. So by being able to look at the average revenue per minute and look at how many minutes you had available, it netted you an ability, you know, to be able to see where there were other opportunity. And the 72 million certainly didn't take them to 100%. We looked at, you know, like a 78% utilization of bringing those rooms up to where they needed to be. But we also, as you know, are a strategy company as well. And so we handed it off. We looked at what strategy could do in terms of looking at the demographics and the market, and was it realistic to expect that they could backfill these cases? And was there enough volume? So we were able to satisfy that question, you know, for them to then begin to put together a marketing and a business development strategy so that they could realize these savings. So with that, Aaron, unless you have anything else, we'll hand it over and see if anyone has any questions.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very, very much. I think this is extremely fascinating. Why don't we take the screen down so we can see some people? One thing I'd like to ask is how long does it take from start to finish? Everything works so fast. I mean, you're not talking about, say, for instance, this particular assignment that you had, Sharon, since you get access to the information so quickly, mm-hmm. when can you return findings to your client?
Well, it depends on how disparate the data fields are, Linda. So when you're talking about perion, you know, there's a lot of things like we do, and I'll probably get technical on you, like evoke potential. Sometimes anesthesia is not connected. You know, so it depends on how disconnected the organization is. But even with that, I mean, Aaron and their team is able to turn that data around, at least give me working data within probably a week and a half to begin to start my process. Now, some of the other pieces that need to be enhanced, it may be, you know, 3 weeks before I get it all, but still 3 weeks of integrating an entire hospital's data and being able to benchmark them so that I can actually move forward. I have the data in hand by the time I get teams set up, you know what I mean, to be able to look at it. So for the facility component of that, it took us about 9 months to get to that conclusion because we wanted to make sure that if we said that you could get more cases in the room or you could redesign this room this way, it made sense. So we created simulations to make sure that we could simulate it with a higher volumes. And then, you know, as far as the supply chain component and the other savings component, we did a phase two with this client and we did implementation and knowledge transfer, both to the physicians, to this, you know, to the leadership of the organization, as well as the online staff, you know, frontline staff. So that piece took us about 8 or 9 months. So all total less than 2 years to do a full implementation of the programs and to validate that what we had found and what we recommended actually worked.
And that answer,
that's a long way around, but.
Yeah, but generally speaking, I remember on one of the calls, Aaron, where it was actually an attorney that asked the question, why wouldn't a hospital use you? Like, it's crazy that they wouldn't use you. And but do they generally take all of your recommendations? I don't see why they wouldn't. I mean, my gosh, it's incredible.
Well, I mean, it, and I'll take the first stab at this, Aaron, and you can chime in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'll be honest with you. A lot of it has to be, you know, how quickly they can get them implemented. And two, you know, the sensitivity of the information. So we may prioritize some things before others because we want to get some wins for maybe for areas that may be a little bit more sensitive. So if I go in and I'm able to show a physician how he can add on another case and be more productive in the operating room, I may put talking about his consumption practices, you know, secondary on the line, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it is how you prioritize it. And I work really close with leadership, you know, with how quick Aaron can get me the information, with, you know, the organization and their ability to do the implementation. And quite honestly, sometimes we're brought in because it's difficult. And so it's a little bit easier sometimes if you bring an outside person in to be able to make those changes and put change mm-hmm. management in place than it is for the people that are internal to the organization.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let me brag a little bit about Sharon and her team here, because one of the biggest things, you know, I'm very data centric, right? So if I identify some terrible practices on the data side, all I can do is kind of drop that data on the table, right? Especially if you think about it from an end user perspective, like if Sharon wasn't in the picture, to her point, I might be telling the surgeon and putting his data up on the screen next to all the other surgeons, yeah, you're terrible, right? And that can get very, right? Contentious. Sharon and her team have the ability to digest all the data and tactically go in and to watch her work and what she chooses to talk about first and execute first and get things moving. By the time she gets down to, oh, by the way, you know, you're doing a terrible job at this thing, the physician's like, oh, wow, yeah, you're right. We should totally change that. And it's amazing to watch how her team does that. And then that's where you get all that clinical knowledge from her team, that the data side of the house, you know, we can present data, we can say this is good, this is bad, this doesn't look the way it should. But with her, you get all that expertise and tactics and knowledge about how a hospital works, how the people are going to react to certain things, who you should share that data with is a huge thing, right? Again, as a data company, we just share the data, it's out there for everybody. But when you combine the two, you get both the best data and the best execution. And I think that's a huge win that I love watching her do. I think it's amazing.
That's great.
You know, Linda, one of the things that we do, and it's not necessarily just hospital related, but you know, I've worked a good bit of my career also with the vendor side of the world. I mean, because mm-hmm. a lot of times the cost that we are experiencing has to do with the inefficiencies of being able to deliver to point of use. And so be able to sit down with a vendor to understand what hoops he's having to jump through to be able to get something to point of use and be able to smooth that pathway so it's streamlined and to be able to initiate those cost reductions on my end because they are doing the right things becomes extremely rewarding. And I could do a whole presentation on some of the vendor, you know, challenges that are out there because it's driven from the end user side, how they're consuming information, how they're ordering information, you know, or products and resources. So we look at it from a lot of different perspectives. And, you know, when I'm sitting down with a organization and they're saying, oh my gosh, this vendor will pick on your hips, Aaron, is $1,000 higher than the other vendor out there. But I, you know, sometimes I have to deliver the bad information that says, you know, to the client, hey, you know, I know that you want to get this cost down, but the reality is we've got a lot of homework and cleaning up around our own doorstep for me to get that price. But I will work with you to be able to get there so that you can experience that not only with this vendor, but with other vendors out there.
That's great. Anybody have any other questions? There's Potter.
Sharon, when you do, you mentioned 140 projects. So you must have a lot of business separate from Healthcare IQ. And when you do a job for a hospital, is it a one shot or are you retained on a continuous basis?
Well, we have some large systems out there right now, Robert, that are have been a repeated client of ours for 10, 12 years. We have an 85% repeat rate to come in, not to repeat what we just completed, but maybe refresh or apply this knowledge in a different, you know, area of the hospital. So we're really proud of our repeat rate. We say average 85, quite honestly, it's closer to probably 91, 92%. And we work with a lot of large
92%, I didn't catch
91, 92% repeat clients.
Repeat.
You
come back, is that what you're saying?
So let's say that we're doing a strategic facility master plan or we're doing an operational assessment. And we've done one for a client and 18 months later, they're like, Sharon, I want you to come back in and look, you know, and see if there's additional improvements we need, or we have a change in payer mix and it's really going to impact us. How is that going? How can you help me with that? So they'll call us to come back and do different types of analytics for them or refresh something that we've already done. I mean, one of our longest clients right now, we do a lot of the strategic and facility piece, you know, for Ascension. We've been there, they've been our client for 12, 13 years. And a good portion of that exclusive.
Yeah, and just from the data side too, we see one of the beautiful things about, again, having that integrated data is when, especially on anything supply oriented or procedure oriented utilization, product use, whatever those things are, all those projects that Sharon puts in place, we can measure going forward if the tools are retained. So when the tools are in place, we can measure those things. And a lot of times what happens is the customer is now measuring those initiatives that Sharon put in place. And as time happens, if they start to see the value of that initiative go down, it's a trigger for them to call Sharon and go, hey, Sharon, you put this in place. And for like 6 months, we were doing really good. And all of a sudden, now we're seeing the value kind of drop off. Can you come back in and see what's happening here? And again, that's a great place where we see that marriage. Without the data, they wouldn't know what was happening. They wouldn't know that the rep figured out what you did, came in, brought a different product in, is now charging over here. So the value of that project is going down and his revenue and his margin went way up, or the you know, physicians went back to old habits or whatever it is. But that measurement piece ongoing is another big way that we can help impact and bring back business again from Sharon's perspective.
Yeah. And for a lot of clients, depending on what they're looking for, Linda, they will ask us to do some post project, you know, reviews for them periodically. Some of that I can do remotely. Maybe it's a one visit. It doesn't necessarily trigger an entire engagement or anything like that. It's just really interpreting the data and helping them understand what's going on in their organization.
coincidentally, somebody on your, and I'll take this offline to discuss with you, somebody on your client list, I'm on their board. And okay. I've been trying to get HCIQ in there, and I invited two of the lead people to come to this meeting today. And then I said, well, there they are. So yeah. I'll talk to you offline.
So, okay.
You would know Aaron who I'm talking about. So no, anyhow. Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Vibia, I see you as a CPA, you probably have something to say. So I just love this. I think it's great stuff. And I don't know how you all feel about it, but hopefully it was important to all of you.
I think you had someone, was she talking to you about being a CPA? When you had your hand up?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's out of Austin. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And Vibia she concentrates in healthcare with her firm. She's with a national firm. So how did it sound to you, Vibia?
Great stuff. Thank you. Thanks for organizing it, Linda. And thank you, Sharon and Aaron, for speaking today.
You're welcome. Yeah,
thank you.
We can't hear you. Lisa, were you trying to talk? No, she's talking. Okay. Well, if nobody has anything. Oh, Lisa, we can't.
We can't hear you, Lisa. Check your phone. It might be your phone's muted.
Yeah, we can't hear you. Oh, well. That's happened to me plenty of times. Okay, well, we will cut it off now. I'll call you separately, Sharon. And of course, Aaron, I always love your presentations. I think they're great. One of the things that I will share with you all that I happen to know is that their R&D division is in San Francisco because that's where all the techies are. So they're using the same technology that what are they, Google and Facebook and
Apple. Yeah, so we recently over the last 3 to 4 years we actually rebuilt the infrastructure of the company from the ground up, and now leverage all that cutting edge technology Apple, Facebook, Google use for their big data, and it's been really fun for us, you know, even from a security standpoint. Like, you know, everybody knows about HIPAA. We engineered a HITRUST standards, which are like the example I always use is HIPAA has about 70 controls on the data that we see. HITRUST has over 400, right? So it's been really fun to see the technology both get more secure. And then the other example I gave, right, was days to hours to minutes of our ability to ingest data. So, you know, as a data, you know, tech geek, I can't get more excited about the idea of being able to ingest a facility's data in a day, you know, digest it all, make sense of it all, and actually have reporting and things turned around in a day. It's amazing to see all that technology come out. So very, very fun.
We do have some questions. Did you see him, Sharon? Were you going to talk?
I was just going to make a comment, okay. But that's okay.
Go ahead.
Lisa asked, I wonder where the next big focus for the next year of healthcare is, the command and control. She's hearing from a lot of hard systems around telehealth, COVID, some of our services and data help inform how to best address this type of facility. I'll let Sharon answer that first, and then I can chime in with all the data side of things that we're hearing as well.
Well, I think, you know, one of the big things that we're seeing, because utilization and productivity is so important right now for hospitals, that because of telehealth, because of these changes, these dramatic shifts that have happened in healthcare, all of a sudden many of the organizations are finding themselves pressured to really, one, respond to telehealth, but also telehealth is shifting things out of their organization. So how do they now manage these large pieces of or large assets, you know, that are only half occupied now? You know, how do you manage that component? So we do work quite a bit around that. You know, and it's not just COVID. I mean, we've got major changes, for instance, in orthopedics where they're shifting now a lot of the orthopedic total hips into ambulatory surgery. And there's a couple of issues with that. It's great from a nurse's perspective that we've moved our technology to a point to where we can be able to do that. But for the hospital, all of a sudden, you've got one of their major revenue producers that is shifting into an outpatient arena. And although that outpatient arena for some organizations may be within their own network, some of them are shifting into privately held ambulatory surgery centers. So what does that do to your organization? How do you compress your organization and get it efficient when you lose that kind of revenue? On the ambulatory side, all of a sudden they've been shifted. These big cases have been shifted into an ambulatory setting where if they're freestanding, independent, or even hospital owned, they're not designed to take on these high resource demand type of cases. So how do then I take a look at that? What are the facility changes I need to make in order to keep that ambulatory surgery center running efficiently? So there's a lot of different components from different perspectives. You know, we're still seeing COVID and some of the impact of COVID. And so we're rapidly developing solutions, but we again are finding that what might be appropriate down in Texas may not be the same thing that is appropriate for Indianapolis or for San Francisco or, you know, Charlotte, North Carolina. So the data and the current situation really dictates how that approach is, or how we approach those issues with what the client is experiencing. You know, just taking that data and letting the data follow us to the solution. But we see a lot of different approaches all over the country with their response to COVID. So I hope that answered it. Aaron, I'll let you jump in at this time.
Yeah, the only additional thing, obviously, we hear all the same things that Sharon's hearing, and obviously that's another great view of what she does, mixing the clinical with the construction side. So, hey, we have a giant building. Even we were building for X, but now we need it to be a telehealth center. Or, you know, so we hear those things again. We hear it from, because remember, most of our customers are continuous customers, right? They sign up and they're our customers forever. Most of our customers, like really the big data pieces that we looked, come back to the things that Sharon talked about around revenue maximization and operation maximization on the service lines that opened up first, right? We have so many ORs, but we're not doing all of our services right now. And even the services we have open, people are postponing that care. So we want to maximize the amount of revenue we can get out of the service lines we do have. So that's a request we're seeing a ton of. And then obviously on the supply side, we're seeing huge, huge amounts of requests from our customers for helping them find things, getting the best prices for things that have never existed before, you know, all those different things. So we saw a lot of that as well. And we think that revenue maximization piece, again, Sharon and I have had, God knows, countless conversations about that and talked to combined customers and our customers and her customers about how we can help and help them get the most out of the room they have and the amount of people they have and the cases that they have.
Okay. Well, and I think now, I know, Aaron, we talked about this earlier, is hospitals were just punting as best they could dealing with this virus. And so now they're wrapping their arms around it and they're able to say, what are we going to do? We've got to do something more. But before, it was just do whatever you can. We can't even get into you.
Exactly.
They were buying whatever they needed, wherever they could, period.
I was going to say working with Aaron, and he helps feed our tool, but we have developed a lot of tools on our side, Linda, that you know, obviously when the OR shut down because of COVID, you know, it just devastated the hospitals. And then it didn't mean that your current demand of cases and patients went away. Although there were people who were delaying some of their procedures, what we were finding is that they're hitting the ORs now in a more complex state. So, because they have delayed it the way that they have. So we actually have a tool that for a top level assessment, I'll do a little promotion here, but we have a QI, what we call surgery IQ tool, where I can ingest just a little bit of information and work with organizations on what cases need to go first, what needs to go second, what needs to go third, so that one, you're trying to build up and recapture some of that lost revenue, but also meet today's demand in those particular areas. It's free to our clients if they want to send us data and us be able to help them. With the increase we're seeing in COVID right now, there's a few hospitals not too far from us that have actually decided to begin cutting back on surgery again. So, you know, I don't know what's to come, but I think having as many tools to your disposal to try to help figure that out, because it's new ground for all of us.
Yeah. Okay, folks, it's right at 1 o'clock, and I think this has been great. Thank you so very, very much. And let's all go out and make some money. And several of you are in the business, and I'm sure Sharon and Aaron would be happy to talk with you offline about, you know, if you've got clients or something that may be interested in learning more about this, and you can ask some questions privately. So I will offer that up. Okay. And you can give me a call. I'll be happy to give you their contact information. With that, I have a happy Wednesday afternoon, and whoever you might've voted for, I hope they win for you. And hopefully we'll get all that out of the way before too long. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.